What an honor it is to be sitting down in the home of Chuck Stewart, the famous photographer who lives in Teaneck and has lived here for many years, but his work is known all over the world. Chuck, thanks for joining us, first of all.
My pleasure.
You know, the fact that your work is now in the halls of WBGO is so special to us. Everybody who walks by has a particular artist they look at and say, that's my favorite, that's my favorite. When you think of your work hanging at WBGO, you have work in the Smithsonian, you've had exhibitions all over the world. What does it mean to have your work on display at what we consider the greatest jazz station?
Well, I don't know how to respond to that. It feels good. I'm pleased. But it's my children that put it up. I haven't seen it because I've been sick, and physically I haven't been able to go down to look at it.
On your 13th birthday, your mother gave you something that would change your life and the course of photography when you really look at it. Tell us about your 13th birthday and what you got from Mom.
Well, she gave me a box brownie, 616. And I took it to school that day, and just coincidently, Marian Anderson came to visit the school. So I took pictures of her with the faculty and with the kids and so forth and so on. And when I got the pictures back from the drugstore, everybody wanted some. I made $2. Now, in those days, this was during the Depression. I got a quarter a week allowance. $2 was a lot of money.
So at that point, maybe you started to think, hey, I could make some money early on just as a young boy. But you obviously weren't thinking of it as a career at that time. But at least you were thinking that I could make some change doing that, right?
That's for sure.
Now, you have said that it's the photographer's eye that gives a picture soul and tells a story. When we see those pictures hanging up at WBGO, we can see exactly what you're talking about. One in particular that the guy I work with in the morning, Gary Walker, has asked, he said, ask Chuck about the Dinah Washington picture. He says, you can actually hear that photo, is how he phrases it. He wanted to know, was she actually singing there or was she yelling?
Well, if she was on stage, she was actually singing. If she was in the studio, she might have been practicing. You see, what happens in the old days when you went to a recording session, you could take pictures on two occasions. One, they rehearsed everything before they made a take. Then after the take, because you couldn't shoot during the take because they could hear the clicks of the camera. But after the take, then they were listening to the playback to determine whether they were satisfied or whether they wanted to do it again.
The name Herman Leonard is connected with you. Tell our listeners what he meant to you and who he was.
Herman was my mentor. He had gone into the service and he started out at Ohio University, and he had gone into the service and overseas and all that sort of thing. And then he came back to get his degree. And I think this was 1947. That's when we met. And then after he got his degree, he went up to Canada to study with Joseph Karsh. And he was Karsh's only student. And Karsh at the time was known as the greatest portrait photographer in the history of the world.
What was the most important thing that Herman taught you when it comes to photography?
To think and to see what I was looking at.
Your work goes way beyond music. You have a lot of great moments in U.S. history that you've captured. When you think about your career, what's the first thing that comes into your mind? If somebody says, you're a photographer, what was your best moment?
Probably at the atomic bomb test in Nevada.
And that you were the only African American photographer to capture those moments, right?
No, there was a motion picture cameraman that I worked with. I did the stills. As a matter of fact, I'll show you a picture of that moment.
So what was going through your mind as you had the opportunity to take those photos of those early tests?
What was going through my mind is that I don't get blown up by the atomic bomb.
So when it actually happened, What were you thinking about when you found out what really did take place?
No, what it was, so that you have a better understanding, they knew that the atomic bomb was effective, but very few people were cleared to see the bomb and to go to these kind of tests. I was one of the few that was Q-cleared at the time. And I could go in the room and actually see the bomb itself know what it was all about. Now, what they would do, because they did it in the desert, they would take a tank, sit it out in the open. They would dig a hole and set a tank in the hole, take a tank and set it behind a bar or something to help it, save it, and set it, a tank in a half dozen other places. Then they would explode the bomb to see what the effect was on the tank or whatever it is that they were using. And my job was to go around and photograph the results. And I can't prove that because all the pictures belong to the government.
In today's world of digital photography, everybody thinks they're a photographer. Everybody thinks they can take great pictures. But we know that's not the case. So when you look at people's photographs, even if you look at your children's photos, can you look at it with just joy, or does it have to be with a critical eye?
Now, with my children's photos, I look at it with joy. Somebody else's pictures, I wonder. Because, see, the digital thing would have put people like me out of business because I had to know every aspect of what I was doing. And my eyes said, there's the picture. The picture's here. Now, what camera shall I use? Okay, once I take the picture, how do I improve upon it if I have the time? Then I can go in the darkroom and improve some more. And then I can do this and that and the other thing. And the final result is a picture that I want people to see.
You had an amazing trust with the jazz musicians that you photographed. How did that develop?
Well, as Herman's assistant, we went around, he photographed a lot of jazz musicians, and that's when I met him. So I didn't have a problem as long as when Herman went to Paris with Marlon Brando, he went to the Far East with Marlon, and he came back through Paris, and he was offered a job over there that he insisted he wanted to take. So he called me and asked me if I wanted to take over the studio. Well, I didn't have any problems as long as I was Herman's boy. When I became Chuck Stewart, I had all kinds of problems.
Who was the best person to deal with? Maybe not your best photograph, but the best person that you dealt with on the jazz scene as far as working the clubs?
I don't know. To be perfectly honest with you, I would say right away probably John Coltrane.
That picture of John Coltrane at WBGO is a very big close-up. You can see the mouthpiece of the saxophone. Your John Coltrane photographs are in the Smithsonian. Mm-hmm. When you first had that happen, did that give you any more sense of pride than anything before, or is it just another honor for Chuck Stewart?
As far as I'm concerned, it was just another honor. Because, you see, people want free pictures. So photographers, obviously, are the richest people in the world. The first thing that people see is a picture. And the whole idea of the picture is to make people want to look inside the album or whatever. And as a result, you think, how do I take a picture of somebody and what kind of audience is going to look at this picture and want to listen to the music? So I was doing an album cover once on Guy Lombardo, and I couldn't figure out who his audience was because all I ever heard was da-da-da-da-da-da, ha, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And I said, who's going to buy this record? How do I make people look at a guy and say, I want to hear this? And I looked around the room, because it was at the Roosevelt Hotel, and I was in the middle of the floor, and I looked around the room, 70, 80, 90-year-old couples were dancing. I said, now, they can't dance Dizzy Gillespie. This is his audience.
When we talk about your wonderful black and white images and the 2,000-plus album covers that you've done, anyone in particular that you say, that's Chuck Stewart?
No, I think that I wanted all of them to say, that's Chuck Stewart. Because in the first place, if you say Count Basie, there must be 1,000 photographers that have photographed him. Well, I wanted my picture to say, this is a picture that Chuck Stewart took of Count Basie.
And it certainly comes across. It doesn't take many photos to realize your amazing talent. The photos that we see at WBGO, several of the jazz artists are smoking. And just the capture of the cigarette smoke and how you frame that in the picture is art in itself. Did that come into to play when you're thinking about that as well?
What you're looking for is the best way to, say, show a particular artist that has been shown 1,000 different times. But it's from my point of view. And so everything that they do came into play.
What did Quincy Jones say to you after that photo shoot? It's a wonderful photo that's hanging up of Quincy there in the WBGO hallways right now. So many people have said, that's Q. And so what kind of reaction did you get for him or other artists after they saw your work?
Well, it wasn't so much about what their reaction, because once I took the picture and I was satisfied, I didn't necessarily spend time with the other artists, because at the time it was just a job. I had a wife and three children, a mother-in-law, and a dog. And that's why a lot of things that I should have done that I didn't do, like I never photographed Charlie Parker, and I knew him very well. But, you know, I said, no, Bird, I'm not going to give you some money so you can get stoned. That doesn't make sense. And he looked at me and he said, you know, young blood, you're going to die from goodness. So.
Goodness is something that Chuck Stewart has been giving people for many, many years through his wonderful photography work. Tell us the story about how you were on the Beatles tour, but people couldn't keep their hands off you, and as a result, you gave up that gig.
Yeah, they were in New York, and my studio was on the same street block from the hotel that they stayed in. And so Capitol Records said, you know, take some pictures of the Beatles. And I was taking some pictures, and I wasn't happy about it because they wanted all of the negatives, all of everything. But anyway, I was coming out of the hotel, and people started screaming at the Beatles, all these little girls and things, and they started grabbing me and pulling off my clothes and all that kind of business. And I said, you know, there's no black Beatles. And they said, you with them.
Crazy scene at that time, right?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
You mentioned that this was a job for you. At any point when you were going through this, did you think about what kind of legacy you're leaving and what kind of capturing of not only music but other things that you're leaving behind so others can really get a sense of what it was like at that time?
No.
Now that you look back on it, what do you think?
Well, now that I look back on it, I said, well, what can I tell you? I'm famous.
Someone gets a chance to see your photography for the first time. Some people will be coming to WBGO for the reception and see your work for the first time. What would be a comment that you would treasure from someone who sees your work?
I like it.
That's all you need.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go back to your time in college. You got a fine arts degree in photography from Ohio University. And at that time, there weren't many people of color getting a fine arts degree in photography. What was it like for you? Did you face any kind of discrimination at Ohio University? Or was it the fact that since you already had picked up some talent, people just let you alone?
No, it was very strange. See, there were two schools at the time that offered a fine arts degree. One was the University of Tulsa, which did not permit blacks to enter, and the other was Ohio University. Well, a girlfriend of mine worked for Barry Goldwater, and he said, if you can get him into college, I can keep him there. But I can't get him there because there's politics and it would look bad. So my professor, Harry Goldstein, and Mr. Chittister worked it out, and I went to Ohio University.
When did you really know that you had this eye for photography? When did that come in? Was it back when you were 13? Was it at Ohio University? Was it working in the clubs? When did you really know that you were going to be, you at least had something that you were pleased with?
Well, I knew right away because it was something that I said, if I show people a picture that I want them to see of whomever, then it has got to be, it's got to have a stamp of approval.
We just had Miles' son and nephew into the radio station just this week. Miles Davis is just one of the amazing jazz musicians that you captured in your wonderful images. Any stories about Miles that you want to pass along?
Well, Miles used to call me James Moody, and we were in Italy. I'd gone over there with Max, and he opened the show. And then the Dizzy came in to do the middle part of the show, and Moody was in the band. So, and then Miles closed out the show, and I said, Moody, let's go around to Miles' dressing room and see if he can tell us apart, because he keeps calling me James Moody. So we went around to Miles' dressing room, put our arms around each other, and said, okay, Moody, Miles, can you tell us apart? And he said, I could always tell you all apart. You the Jane Moody with the camera, and he the Jane Moody with the horn.
That's wonderful. How about reaching young kids of today? What do you want to tell the young crowd about your work, photography? Any advice for someone who wants to, well, they're not going to be the next Chuck Stewart, but they might be the next top photographer. What's your advice to them?
I can't give advice because in the old days I had to know what I was doing. Today, with the new technology, people can take 1,000 pictures and throw away 999, and if they are lucky, the 1,000th one is sensational. If they're not lucky, then they just wasted a lot of film and money.
I understand that you have a piano somewhere in the house, right? Right behind us. And so, but you never wanted to play, even though being around those artists. Any reason why you didn't want to play jazz?
No talent. I took piano lessons for 8 years, and when I got through, I couldn't play chopsticks. And I was at my mother's assistant that I practiced on the piano for 8 years. And the only tune that I remember that I could play with Minuet and G.
So you were blessed with the talent of a wonderful eye, but not necessarily your hands to play the piano. Mm-hmm. Chuck Stewart, we wish you the best of luck and hope you feel better soon.